Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube. Nintendo!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat. I'm Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show. And coming up on Nintendo Voice Chat, we have a very special show for you, talking to Nintendo independent developers on some really cool projects that are coming out this year, followed by a really cool interview with Damon Baker of the Portfolio Management Third-Party Relations team. So stick around for that. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Here we go.
Thanks, Jose. Want a Nintendo Switch? Of course you do. That's right. Nintendo is teaming up with IGN to give you a chance to win a Nintendo Switch. Just check out go.ign.com/NVC giveaway for more info. And that's not all. In celebration of Link making his heroic return, later in the show, your NVC crew will switch back to me for a special treat as we head to the street to find out just how much the public knows about this legendary franchise. See you in a bit. For now, switching back to you guys.
Thanks a lot, Naomi, and look forward to that trivia later. But here to talk to us about some very special projects in the works, we have Benedict from Team Tumbleseed.
Yeah.
And we have Bethany from Team 17. And this is an exciting moment because you guys have some really cool Switch projects in the works. And we also have Per Schneider.
From Team IGN.
From Team IGN.
A lot of teams
in the room. So let's talk a little bit about your projects. Let's start with you, Benedict. Tell folks about... Because your game astounds me because it's one that the minute you look at it, you're not quite sure what's going on. And so you need someone to give you that pitch.
So it's not just me. Okay, good.
Yeah. So Tumbleseed is what we call roly roguelike. It's a game about rolling a seed from the bottom of a mountain to the top of a mountain.
Yes.
And so we've got this procedurally generated world, and we've got over 30 different seed powers. And you use these powers as you plant yourself as the seed and kind of battle your way through different creatures, avoid holes, encounter obstacles, try to basically get some crystal economy going. And so it's basically a game where you're kind of, it's a roguelike game where the main mechanic is balancing a seed on a vine.
Nice. And Chloe Rad from our team got to play it at the Nindie Showcase, and she was absolutely in love. She's just like, I just love how there's this sort of intuition that is happening, and I definitely want to get into that conversation with you, talking about how you're taking advantage of HC Rumble and sort of the Switch features.
Totally.
All right, so Bethany, I didn't do you and your team enough justice. Team 17 is a little too vague, and you've got some really hot properties actually right now for some independent games. Why don't you talk about them for folks?
Yeah, so there's loads of different kind of games that we're bringing to the Switch. With our developers from our Gamesable.
Yeah.
So we've got Overcooked coming from Ghost Town Games.
Game is so good, first and foremost.
Destroys families.
Yeah, we've had a lot of kind of couples coming up during GDC like, oh no.
I play it with my kids and they want to kill each other after like a round of cooking together. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you.
It does that. We also have Ukulele coming by Playtonic Games.
Okay.
And The Escapist 2, which we're doing in conjunction with Moldy 2 Studios. So a lot of games coming.
Okay. So you just rattled them off, but Ukulele, of course, is the spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie, right?
Is.
There's a pretty prominent team working on that.
Yeah.
And Escapist is this really cool kind of top-down prison escape type game. When you look at Ukulele, how do you feel about like this franchise coming back? Did you play Banjo-Kazooie back in the days?
Yeah, it looks beautiful. Like a lot of the people on the team as well, like big Banjo fans. So everyone's just like loving having it in the studio. Like we've been working on it together for a while with Playtonic. And when we first started getting builds in, people like cooing around the screen like they'd seen a baby for the first time. It's a beautiful, beautiful looking game. So we're really excited to be working with them.
To this day, I mean, editors in the office use Banjo-Kazooie sounds to communicate with each other.
So. Wait. No, that's not true. The GM of the company who's seated right there is the one who goes around. And that's what happens.
That's fantastic.
No, there are a lot of Banjo references in this building.
Yeah,
that's one of our all-time favorites, and Banjo-Tooie, of course, too. And it looks like that game continues the kind of the silliness of the old Rare games, huh?
Yeah, it's got a lot of kind of like old references in, but like a lot of kind of new fresh things in there as well. So hopefully going
to
really enjoy it.
It's really awesome. Yeah.
So then I'd like to ask you both, talk about sort of the relationship with Nintendo, like who got in contact with who, just the vague details, since you probably can't say too much. But, you know, just sort of what were your goals and how did this sort of all come to be?
Sure, I can start. So Tumbleseed is a very weird game in that it's not like a lot of things, and the control scheme is very weird, and it looks very different from a lot of games, especially a lot of roguelikes. And so our goal is, or a large goal of ours, is kind of to make a colorful game that's challenging. And so when working on the game, you kind of think, like, what audience exists that appreciates kind of the thing that you're going for? Colorful, challenging games is something that Nintendo's been the standard bearer of forever, and is kind of like, you know, they're the only ones who have really been kind of continuing to do that through time. Whereas, you know, nowadays it's kind of like if a game is challenging, it's usually like kind of bloody.
There's
some like swords swinging around. And so we just thought, you know, we'd love to work with Nintendo and to have it on Nintendo platforms because we feel like that's a really good match in terms of, you know, what Nintendo games have been like traditionally and sort of that blend of things. And so, yeah, we just reached out to them. And this was before the Switch was kind of as known, as much of a known quantity as it is now, back when it was the NX, and people, details were very sparse. But yeah, we kind of reached out and we're like, hey, we want to be on the Wii U. And then kind of as we kept talking, it kind of was like, oh, well, let's see, like, you know, when are you guys coming out? And we were like, hope, you know, spring 2017. And they were like, okay. And then the conversation just kind of developed from there in terms of they also kind of saw that match in terms of aesthetics and challenge and sort of how that kind of feels very at home with Nintendo.
And the control scheme, can you talk a little bit about
that?
Like, how does that work? And then also the rumble, you brought that up.
So the control scheme, it's a dual stick game. A lot of people think it's initially kind of like a balance game where you're kind of like tilting back.
It looks like a tilt.
But it's dual stick. We experimented with a lot of controls, but in the end, the dual stick was kind of the thing that gave us the most precision in term, and just felt the best and also kind of just worked best with what you're doing in the game.
It's not a casual game, right? I mean,
no.
You described that. It looks deceptively...
It looks deceptively...
benign.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden people kind of get run into a wall and they're like, whoa, okay. Yeah, exactly. Like, I see where this is going. So it's a dual stick game. You're kind of controlling either side of this vine. So the left analog stick up and down, right analog stick up and down. That kind of basically controls the angle of this vine. Okay. And then there's the seed, the tumble seed, and he rolls kind of back and forth on it. And so what we do with the rumble, and this is something that we're also super excited about, is the Joy-Cons rumble based on which side you're on and kind of the direction that you're rolling, the speed that you're rolling, and also what type of seed you are. So like I said, there's over 30 different seed powers in the game. And that's kind of where a lot of the strategy and a lot of the kind of like, oh, okay, here's the situation. Here's this type of enemy and this type of enemy. Here's the layout of the holes. What seed powers kind of let me handle the situation the best? And part of that is that the seed powers look different. And so they have different shapes. So some of them are very round. And so then some of them have kind of like sharper edges and some of them have an even different shape. And so with those different shapes, we then also have different kind of rumble textures. And it's kind of one of those things that's very hard to describe. Like, a rumble texture, like, what does that mean? So once people kind of get it into their hands, then you can kind of see, like, oh, the shape kind of matches up with how it feels when it rumbles. And so we have this, it feels... we kind of describe it as like a synesthetic, like extra sense when playing a game. And it really, really makes it come together because, you know, video games are usually like, all right, you've got sound, you've got visuals, you've got, you know, those kind of two things. And then the controls kind of all binding it together. And those things all work together to kind of let your brain kind of connect to the game and to the systems of the game and kind of feel like you're closer to it. And that's when games are at their best, is when you're kind of like, all of these things are working in concert to kind of make you feel like part of the system.
Absolutely.
And so the HD Rumble really adds to that, where it's kind of adding an extra sense of touch, and you kind of get this sixth sense of or whatever sense it is in terms of the number of things happening, but you kind of get this extra sense of like, oh, where's the seed on the vine? And you can actually like look up the mountain a bit and kind of like sense in your hands where the seed is and kind of see how fast it's going, and also kind of remember which seed power you're using currently because of all the different things that the HD Rumble can do.
So I assume the tools are pretty good from Nintendo and like and able to that let you express those different shapes, because I mean traditional rumble is very dumb, right? Like it's on or off and there may be little nuances, right? They get stronger, like if you know the you know the Xbox controller, for example, it makes it feel like you're stepping on the brake, but it's very linear. But in this thing, like it feels like it's a cube or something, right?
Like, people describe it as all different kinds of things, like if there's like balls inside it or if there's a jelly inside it, or sometimes even the HD Rumble feels like there's just a weight to it. It's almost as if like something is getting heavier or something is getting lighter. So I don't think I can speak about the specifics about how it works, and I'm also not the developer who implemented most of it. But yeah, there's a very fine grained control over kind of what you want to communicate through the rumble, and that's what lets developers really express all these different things and really kind of get that extra connection to the player and the experience through the rumble.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, unlike One to Switch where you hold one controller, this is now you have like the two ends of the system when you're in handheld mode.
No, and it's something that, so when we went to the Nitty Showcase, Chloe was the one who took on the game, and so like, all right, I want to check it out, and she came back raving about it. She was like, that's so cool. Just the feel of, like she said, it added this extra sense perception that she didn't have, and so it was something else.
That's awesome.
So then, Bethany, talk a little bit about how your relationship with Nintendo started and bringing, you know, Team 17 published titles to the Switch.
Yeah, so we've been talking to them for a while, and it's just kind of great how kind of like extending that out to indies and being part of the indie presentation and stuff. So, I mean, especially ukulele with kind of like heritage of the developers, it's going to be really great to bring that to the Nintendo audience. And then with Overcooked, you know, it's such a kind of simple kind of pick up and play game, and there's, you know, there's very few buttons in the game that you actually need to use. It's going to be really cool to bring that kind of catch up to a Nintendo as well. So yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah, no, definitely. And was that something that when those conversations started, like those were the games that you guys offered, or was that something Nintendo sort of said, like, hey, no, we've heard a lot about these. These are the ones that we're after.
Kind of just really kind of fit with the platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, The Escapist as well. It kind of like has a really kind of wide audience of people who play it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to appeal to that kind of nature, and it's going to be great for people to kind of be able to take it on the go with them as well. So,
Absolutely.
It's interesting. I mean, there aren't your three biggest franchises, right? Like, you guys are very known for another game that drives people crazy, right? With little guys shooting each other, you know, obviously the Worms franchise and all that. It's an interesting selection. Is there more coming from you guys for this platform? Anything you can talk about?
Who knows? At the moment, it's just those three that we're kind of focusing on right now. So, definitely love to bring more to the platform.
Yeah, and what has your Switch experience been like? Like, have you sort of, like, your impressions and just sort of the feel of, like, you know, having access to the device and really learning what it is? I'm assuming before we did, like, just if you can share a little of that.
It's been really, like, we're still kind of working really closely with Nintendo to bring the games to the Switch. We're looking at doing the HD Rumble for Overcooked. So when you're kind of like chopping up the tomatoes stuff, you kind of feel it. And then as you're taking the soup around, you kind of like feel it sloshing around in the pan and stuff. Yeah. So
really excited. Maybe for folks who haven't played it, I mean, Overcooked is really 4-player cooperative, right? Mm-hmm. But also not really. I mean, you get into fights, but like your success depends on your ability to coordinate, right?
Yeah.
In these different roles. Like, you all play on one system, or can you play a remote? Like, can you do online, for example, in this?
We're still quite early days. We're still kind of figuring out how the multiplayer is going to work, but yeah, it's going to be really kind of cool to do that. And then simple to kind of pick up on the controller as well. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good, with tabletop mode, I can imagine just taking the system with you. You always have two controllers.
Yeah, that's what I'm really
excited
about. You
can get going right away.
Yeah, just the idea of like dropping, all right, pair, let's do this.
Yeah.
And then like having the ability to like sync an extra Joy-Con to it. So, you know, you'll get up to those 4 players and then go from there.
Yeah, when we were actually at the Nindie Showcase, as we were kind of setting up, we hadn't actually felt any HD Rumble that we hadn't made. So we actually had no idea like what the kind of, you know, the Nintendo produced HD Rumble felt like.
Yeah.
And Damon was like, oh yeah, like, come up to my hotel room and like I can show you 1-2 Switch. And I was like, oh yeah. And then 5 minutes later, he walks in the room and he like takes out his Switch and he just plops it down on the table and takes off the Joy-Cons. I'm like, oh yeah, we don't have to go to a hotel room. Like, the console just comes right with you.
Yeah,
and it was like this really weird, I always forget that it so fully embodies both, kind of like the sitting on a couch and like going to a hotel room to check something out, but also then, you know, just taking it with you and like putting it on a table and just taking out the Joy-Cons wherever you are. And those kind of moments keep happening for me in terms of like, you know, I'm working on the game and I'm just sitting at my computer all day, like coding away.
Yeah.
And then it's like time to test. And then I'm like sitting there, I'm like at my chair, I'm like, my back hurts. And I'm like, oh wait, why am I sitting here? And then I like take it off and like I go and sit on the couch. It's like, oh man, like, it's such a weird thing that I kind of describe it almost as like, but when people first got like phones, like when people first got like their first smartphone, it was kind of like a, why do I want a phone all the time? Like, why do I want this big thing? Why do I want to pay this big data plan? Like, what could I possibly want with that?
Yeah.
But then like, as it slowly kind of works its way into your life, you start kind of realizing like, oh, this is actually useful a lot of the time. And you start doing more and more with it. And that's kind of how it's been for us with the Switch is like, you know, you start off and you kind of just have it plugged in at your desk and hooked up to a monitor. But then as you kind of go with it, you start realizing more and more like, oh no, like I can take this with me and I can do this. And there's actually a lot of times when that's absolutely something I want to do with kind of a, you know, like a console style experience game.
Yeah, that versatility factor. I mean, we love that too. We're nerds, so when there's a new Star Wars movie opening, we'll sit in line for it, right?
Yeah.
And like just the thought that now you can bring a device that you can easily play with 4 people. Yeah. You know, in the past, like we've obviously done that with 3DS, but everybody needed the same game, and I think that changes things around a bunch. I think it's
especially
really
just having the multiplayer like available at all times and what that does. And I mean, nothing kind of matches up to the first time you take like a big game like Zelda out of that cradle and you're like, all right, I'm taking it with me and I'm leaving the house and I'm gonna go. And that was me for a bit.
Did you just go whoop, whoop,
yeah
whoop.
Maybe. No, totally. And it's just, it's exciting to see, especially the content that you guys are bringing, because there's a lot of variety to it. There's a lot of color to it. There's a lot of co-op to it. There's a lot of, like, it's just really fun. Are you out of curiosity, Benedict, are you exploring any new modes because of the technology, or are you focusing right now on just sort of, keeping the same experience?
Totally. It's definitely kind of opened our eyes to that being a possibility, and so we're definitely thinking about it. Right now we're just focused on finishing the game, so that's kind of the only thing that we're doing, is just focusing on finishing. But we have all these ideas now, and that's kind of something else that I've noticed having a Switch dev kit and, like, working with it, is, like, you just start getting these ideas of, like, there are all these things that work with this system that, weren't really possible before, or are just things that you can do that you couldn't do with any other system. We're thinking about it, but right now just finishing the game.
It's a Swiss Army knife, right? Like, you hold the controller and you see all the buttons and what you can do, and then you go, wait, what do you use the IR camera for? All right, what could we do with that? And I'm really curious to see, especially what the indie scene is going to do with some of those features. NFC is not, like, as an indie, you can't make your own amiibo or anything easily. Well, yeah. Shovel Knight.
I mean, it can happen. Yeah. It can happen.
Certainly, HD Rumble, HD Rumble, and the IR camera are going to, I think, I it's going to be interesting to see what people come up with, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So then let the folks know at home, when are you shipping, or where are you aiming to ship, if you haven't announced the launch date?
Sure. So Tumbleseed will hopefully be coming out sometime this spring. We're getting really close. We're kind of pushing that final push. Spring is what we're saying.
Okay, so you know soon. All right. And Bethany?
Yeah, and for all of them, we're still kind of working really closely to bringing them. So release date is still to come, but this year.
Okay, but 2017.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Can't wait. Really excited. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have some new developers. Stick around.
Here we go.
Welcome back to MVC, and joining us for this segment, we have Vertex Pop, we have Mo in the house,
hey. We
also have KM, and I'm struggling with your first name, so remind me.
That's perfect. Cole Magnus.
But Cole Magnus. You have a very cool first name, by the way.
You need like a giant battle axe.
First name. Mo is like, I don't really like my name. It's too complicated.
No, it's
fantastic.
Well, you haven't got my surname yet, so.
Yeah.
What's that?
Trowidson.
Yeah, that's the one I didn't go. I was like, I'm just going to let him take it from there. I didn't want to make a mistake. And we also have Gordon from Raw Fury. Thank you so much for coming. And we have Pear here.
Hey.
And we're talking to you guys about the projects you're working on and sort of, tell the folks at home, give them the elevator pitch. We have first Graceful Explosion Machine.
Yep, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's lead off with that.
So Graceful Explosion Machine is a side-scrolling shooter. You are equipped with a quad weapon array, which is basically four weapons which you can use all the time, like anytime, and each one is just on a face button. So a lot of aliens to shoot, lots of weapons. Each weapon is like woefully overpowered and like tons of fun to use.
Yeah.
And it's really about like, it's a shooter and you're blasting a lot of stuff, but you're also thinking about what weapon to use in the right situation, like either tactical or against which enemy or whatever.
Is that the graceful factor?
Really the graceful factor is like swapping between the weapons and just using them, like chaining them up kind of. So like kind of like a fighting game, like where you're like trying to chain up your attacks one after the other.
Yeah.
It's very graceful, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean that art style. I mean, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
It does not look like most shooters.
Yeah. So we like pretty colors. I like pretty colors. The only direction I gave my artist was like, it has to be colorful. It needs to look super pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It helps when you're making an action game, especially like when there's a lot of stuff going on, to have like clarity in the art. So the vector art really makes like, it's very easy to parse what's going on screen. So if there are dozens of enemies and explosions and your UI is like, going off, like beeping and stuff, you still know what's happening. And so that was important. Also, I think that if your game looks pretty and you don't do well, like as a player, like when you die, you still don't feel bummed out because like there are so many pretty colors. Like,
Congratulations prizes.
Yeah.
Colors.
When you win, you feel good. When you don't, it's like, oh, pretty colors. That wasn't so bad.
I love that anime.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it again.
Yeah, we have a really cute skull when you die, actually.
Oh, there you go.
You'll love it, yeah.
Very nice. So then let's talk a little bit about Garner and Dundara. And I believe you guys had a very good night the other night at the Game Developers.
Yeah, it was
talk
good.
A little bit about that, yeah.
Well, now it's IDF winning Garner. You know, it's pretty cool to have...
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very, very good. We had a... pretty much a freak out in three different locations around San Francisco when this happened. We were streaming it at the garage where we were showing off our games, and then some of us were at the dinner with some pretty serious people, and we just started screaming everywhere. And it was amazing.
Raw fury.
Yes.
Joy.
Yeah. Blue with
raw joy. Yeah. No, but it was amazing. And seeing Ditto and Martin up there on stage, Joar couldn't make it, but it's an incredible game, and we're so proud to just be here and represent it.
So for folks who may not know a lot about it, give them the elevator pitch. Tell them about...
Well, Garner, it's basically a procedurally generated platformer where you play the little bit strange hero, Ick, which is out to help his friend, Sally, which is the beached land whale, or whatever you want to call it, which is going through a tough time. So he's out trying to help her. And along the way, there's another character coming in, which is Death. Okay. And I can't say much more because then I'll spoil the little story in the game.
Yeah.
He saw him as like a father figure type character when Ditto was developing it. And so he kind of just, made these kind of cute, quirky characters and put it together. And it's like amazing art style, very similar with the idea.
Yeah.
A lot about colors and visual like style, but simplicity at the same time. There's so many interesting and cool things about that game. It's like when you watch it, it's cuteness as well. It's like when you die and when you kill enemies, they explode into little puffs of skull smoke and things to that degree. And Ditto has this real knack for colors and color combinations. And it's just like, it's visually just mesmerizing when you're playing it. And then it won for audio. So it to complement that visual style is this incredible track of, music. And then they've done a lot of things with sound effects, and things change as you combo up and you're killing enemies. So they've done a lot of like hidden techniques that you don't really notice when you're playing, but there's a lot went into how the sound is changes and manipulated by the environment and things you're doing while you're playing.
Okay. It's small things like moving around in the level. It's actually generated around you, so you don't see the entire level, you see the area that it's around you. So you, when you're walking on the floor, they actually hear the little when the pieces of the floor or the walls, etc., come together. It's super nice.
Right. And then a little bit on Dundara.
Yeah, that's a personal favorite of mine. So we are working with two developers out of Brazil.
Okay.
And they're incredibly talented. And so they had this inspiration from this kind of person who was a real person that existed. Her name was Dandara, and it was in the 1600s. And there's like a folklore that's built up around her. And nobody really knows what's true because there's not a lot of documentation. So it's been passed down by word of mouth from generation to generation about this kind of this iconic hero person who kind of was pushing against slavery. So they kind of took that mythos of that and then kind of came up with this kind of, they didn't want to do something super serious because then you kind of go down that path where it's a little scary. It's like, people are going to start like, judging it and looking at it in this way, but they wanted to just do something fun and just took a lot of inspiration from the real Dandara and put her in this kind of mythical world where it's kind of bending gravity. So they did this really interesting thing where you leap around and it's this Metroidvania style game. Yeah. So these huge levels, you're finding new weapons, power-ups, you're fighting these kind of, these otherworldly creatures and trying to explore and find these things, and you kind of have this loose agenda and like in most games like this, so like in Metroidvania, it's like, oh, you got to kill the queen, right? Mm-hmm. And so it kind of draws a lot of inspiration from that kind of storytelling. It's like, you're motivated because you're curious, kind of aspect to it. And I am a huge fan of Metroidvania. So like Castlevania Symphony of Night, I played it through to like 201.4%.
Oh,
I didn't get the 201.6% because I couldn't get the sword familiar to go out far enough in this one tower. Not to nerd out on this. Yeah. Not that it matters.
Absolutely. 0.2%. Yeah, that's amazing. But yeah,
but it, so it really, when I started playing the prototype they sent, it really reminded me of this. And there's something really, really unique, and I'll wrap it up. But it's I'm just a huge fan of this game. You can play it with a controller, a mouse and keyboard, or touch. And it's seamless.
Oh, wow.
So the really unique thing about playing this game on the Switch is it's really the only device where you can kind of, and I hate to say it, switch between between the different input methods, right? You could just take it out without attaching Joy-Cons and play it without any change really in the experience, the input method. So this also gives people a chance to play it however feels most comfortable to them. And so when they had always had this idea of touch, right? But they thought that it would be limited to a specific device, like mobile, right? Yeah. And then the controller would be limited to, you know, console. But now it's like, you know, when they introduced this, we didn't know all the details before they, you know, announced it in November. But it's like when we saw that, we're like, okay, how good does this touch, right? And then they don't say anything about the touch. And then the first time when they were onboarding us as partners, and they, you know, we had to, in Europe, you had to go to like their office in Frankfurt and sit down and go through like all this documentation. And then they had engineers explaining things to you. And I'm like, does it have 10 point input? And the engineer looks at me like, 10 point input? So I was like, you know, like a tablet and the touch interface, because I really wanted to know desperately.
Yeah. What'd he say?
He didn't know the answer. I was like,
it was so well guarded at the beginning.
And then when we got the kid, that was the first thing I did when we got Dandara running on it. I was like,
awesome.
Oh, this feels so amazing. It's really cool.
I mean, you kind of just hinted at the fact that it plays with gravity, but I mean, in reality, it's complete madness with gravity. Yes. I mean, you're running on walls and on the ceiling, and you know, I got a little Castlevania vibe when I see rotating like clockwork kind of spheres, but the character like walks around it like more Mario Galaxy style.
It's really, you have to play it, right? And it's like and feel it, and the music is just incredible, and just the you know, they have, the artist is just fantastic, and it's the things that, and it, the beautiful story behind it as well is like, it's just developers from everywhere. Now, with where things have gone in game development, it's not so specific to, you know, a specific country or a specific region, or, you know, those who have the money to license these super expensive tools. It's like, now it's accessible to such as broad a range of people, and it's so exciting because you get to see games that come with people with a slight different perspective from, you know, from their culture, you know, them growing up and them taking inspiration from those things. So it's beautiful. I love it.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, and you kind of, I mean, you probably know a little bit about expensive tools. You worked on some bigger games before that too, right?
That was kind of big. It was a little big. Well, we used to work together on Battlefield.
So this is a completely different ball game now.
There's a lot of things that spill over, but
it's making games. It's a craft. It's a skill, right? But the teams are smaller, the budgets are smaller, etc. But if you still look at it, it's quite similar in many ways. When you have a bigger team, there's a lot of other things that are needed just by managing a big team, right? But it's really cool to work and see with how a small team that is constrained by budgets, team size, whatever, how innovation really can thrive inside of that environment. It does that in the big games as well, even though it might be challenging regarding sequels, et cetera. There's tons of innovation in big AAA games as well, obviously. But it's so wide that sometimes you can't even see it. You can't see the tree for the forest, or whatever you say in English. But with the smaller games, usually there's one thing that they focus on, and that is laser sharp, and it really shines through, like the movement in Dandara, for example.
Yeah, that's very cool. And with your game, I mean, talk about adapting it to Switch. Like, how, you know, is there how do you feel about it being a console game and a handheld game at the same time? And
yeah, so it worked out really nicely.
Yeah.
Because the way I always thought about Gem, Graceful Explosion Machine, is like, it's the kind of game where you can pick it up and kind of play it for a couple of minutes. Like, every level is like 3 to 5 minutes, right? There are a lot of levels. There's lots of replay value, that kind of thing. But you can really just like pick it up, play, get through a level, and then that's it. You can put it down, right? There's a lot of room for that. But then also, if you want to like really sit down, like zone out and like get a high score or whatever, there's room to do that as well, right? And so we were developing Gem, obviously, before the Switch was announced or before we knew what it was. But I always thought about it as this kind of game that worked well on the big screen, mm-hmm. especially with the visuals and stuff, right? Like, it looks really good on the big screen, but it also works really well on the go, just like as a pick-up-and-play kind of game, right? Yeah. And so when we learned what the Switch was, and I think it was, October or November or whenever, I was just like, oh man, okay, this is perfect. Okay, we have to be on the system because it worked so well. So that was a very, happy coincidence that it worked out as well as it did. But yeah, I think it works really well in both modes, like in handheld mode as well as in TV mode.
You guys play with a rumble at all, with HD rumble stuff?
Yeah. So what I was trying to do before we got the Switch was kind of like, because it's a horizontally scrolling game, it's primarily on the X axis, I guess. Mm-hmm. When stuff happens on the left side of you, I would make the left motor rumble, mm-hmm. and when it happens on the right motor rumble. Nice. So if you're killing aliens on the right side, the side would shake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's using a more typical rumble system. This is kind of nerdy and technical, but all right. So the way that rumble normally works is that there are two counterbalanced motors, which means one is heavier and one is lighter, and then they rotate at different speeds, and that creates a rumbling effect. The problem is the heavier motor spins slower than the smaller motor does. Right? That one goes faster. So if you want to say rumble the left side by this much or the right side by this much, it's actually different. You have to you have to tweak the values so that they feel about the same. But because they're not the same motor, they're not going to feel the same.
Oh. That's cool.
So it was hard to get the effect that I wanted on a typical rumble, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then with the Switch, actually, you know what you were talking about, the touch?
Yeah.
I did the exact same thing with rumble. The guy was it's a linear action. I'm like, oh, I know what that is. That's exactly what I want. So it was the same thing. I freaked out about it and stuff.
Nice.
But
it's the little things.
Yeah. And it's that kind of rumble means that you get the same feel on both sides of the controller, and you have a lot more accurate control over it. So when something happens, when an explosion happens or when you use your weapons, you feel it immediately.
Yes.
Or we have a sniper weapon, it's a beam that goes across the screen, that kind of thing. And it has a hum. So the sound is whoom, whoom, whoom. And you can actually feel that as well in the controller. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a more typical rumble system, that level of detail you wouldn't feel it at all.
Yeah.
So
that texture is very, very fascinating. And for folks listening, it's this thing, just messing around once we switch, we got a preview, but then now seeing, more developers sort of tackle it and apply sort of their ideas to it. It'll be really fascinating to just sort of check that out. I'm curious, how difficult was it to get your game up and running on Switch? Was that something that you had to do a lot of modification and this applies to everyone on this panel. Was it a challenge, to sort of get your game up and running?
We actually had an argument out here in the green room before this, because we're working with a partner that helps Ditto and the guys to actually port the game over.
Yeah.
They're super talented guys, a company called CodeSync.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, they took them a week to get it up and running. And actually, no, it was a day.
It
was one day to get it, from a Unity build and then get it up and running and compile it and get something that runs. So it was really smooth.
Right. We're kind of spoiled when you're building in Unity.
Yeah.
I think, Mo, you have an in-depth experience because you have your own engine that you created. So.
Yeah, so yeah, we use a proprietary engine, my own homebrewed engine, kind of. And so it was longer than a day, right? It was longer than a week. It was a couple of weeks, which was in line with what I've experienced on other consoles. Okay. Yeah. I thought it was super smooth.
Mm-hmm.
The hardware is really nice. This is the stuff that nobody cares about, but the documentation is really good. So you can look up their manuals. Yeah. This is the exciting life of a developer.
Life of a rock star.
It was good. We didn't have a lot of trouble with it. I think the kind of thing that's more challenging or more interesting is kind of how do we use the hardware in a more interesting way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that right now you're seeing games that were announced before the Switch, before we knew the Switch was, mm-hmm. right? I think every game here is that's the case, right? But then I think moving forward, once more people get their hands on the Switch and once they understand what's so unique about it, people are going to come up with more interesting ideas that are like Switch specific, mm-hmm. which is also like, I think our games are really cool and stuff, but I'm like excited to see what happens next as well. Mm. So,
yeah, whenever we get hardware that's different, we're gonna see some pretty unique stuff, right? Like, I mean, we look back now at Nintendo's weird toy experiments, whether it was with Rumble on the Game Boy or with you know, just kind of like the feedback, or like the Wii Sports stuff, or even Wii Fit, right? Like, the Wii Fit board wasn't used for a lot because I think the people who bought it didn't buy it for traditional games, but just like that hardware opening up all these possibilities. Like, somebody, I mean, there was snowboarding in the very beginning.
Snowboarding, and I think someone even did mountain climbing using the Wii Fit. I swear, I think that's a thing. I feel like I wouldn't forget
that's
that.
That's right. And then Activision went all crazy and put a lot of technology in a skateboard, and like then it was dead.
Yeah,
nobody touched that anymore.
Yeah, we even heard about a canceled sort of Rogue Squadron trilogy for Wii that was supposed to use it for like speeder bikes, apparently. Oh. I was just like, yeah, he had like every control scheme under the sun in that thing. Is that something that's sort of challenging with a console that is so modular, like just sort of approaching like, well, how do we want people to play this?
Well, I think it's like they did a smart thing, which is, you know, it kind of falls in line with what we're seeing, but it also introduces some new elements. And I think the biggest compelling thing, I think, for most gamers who are buying it, not from like the development side, is that the ease of taking your game with you. You can be playing on the TV and you can pick it up and take it with you when you're commuting on the bus to work or, you know, those different environments. But like, you know, but then the HD Rumble is super interesting. So that it's like doing it a little bit more, just a little bit more, just pushing things in a more like, just a small amount instead of doing it so drastic that you can't, you would have to do a brand new game, right? Mm-hmm. And really kind of start from the ground up. And that becomes more difficult, especially for smaller indie companies, right? It's like having this thing that's, you know, being able to develop on Unity, having it being on the latest version of Unity, and being able to easily get your game from, you know, from development to the hardware is, I think, and maybe that's the biggest improvement, right? And it's like, but then when you make those things easier, then exploring those little nuanced differences become more manageable, right? And you can take that time to be more doing creative thinking. And I think, like, you know, like you were saying, it's like as time progresses, it's like everything, right? Then you're going to see more and more interesting things. You're going to see stuff with the IR sensor in the bottom, and, you know, using that. I don't know if you guys remember, but the old Metal Gear Solid, remember when you had to plug in controller 2?
Yeah, of course.
They had those crazy things, right? I want to see that kind of come back. We kind of lost that.
Yeah.
So I would like to see that being the creative element that comes out of these cool little things that they put in there that aren't necessary, but they could be really interesting, used by some of these really smart and creative, talented developers. And there's so many of us now that I think we're gonna see something that there's not even possible to kind of preconceive here.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think another like kind of subtle thing that matters a lot is that, you know, you were talking about like the balance board or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. It's important to note that like all the stuff in the Switch comes with the Switch, right? Mm-hmm. So you have like this multitude of input devices, but they all come with the Switch. From a developer perspective, we wouldn't want to develop for something that's like the balance board if the attach rate is only
base,
So over here, you know that there's all this weird stuff in the Switch, but everybody has the weird stuff, so you can make something weird and everybody will like be able to play it. So,
The IR camera is a great example of something that we really, I don't think many people have talked about, right? It's used for a silly eating mini game to Switch, but like somebody's gonna know what to do with it. And they demoed it. They said, hey, it can recognize shapes like this, right? And I'm just curious to see what people will do with it. I'm sure.
So am I.
Some crazy goofy stuff. Yeah.
I'll probably be like, the code to enter the door is hand 2. Yeah. And we're in. Go. Let's go.
Well, I wonder if anybody have you had to play Rochambeau in there.
Play Rochambeau against your Switch. That could be something else. So then final question, just let folks know when are you shipping and when can folks look forward to seeing your game or
go ahead. Well, you go ahead, Mom.
Okay, so
you're first.
Graceful Explosion Machine will be on the Switch in April.
Okay, awesome. Very cool.
And Gunner is coming first to Nintendo Switch sometime this summer.
Okay, got it. And then Dara?
Also, probably late summer.
Okay.
Got it. Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the program. And right now, we've got a Zelda trivia segment, so let's toss it to Naomi.
Thanks, Jose. All right, I'm out here at AT&T Park in beautiful San Francisco, about to ask regular people about The Legend of Zelda, one of gaming's most iconic franchises. To us gamers, these questions are super easy, but how will an average well-to-do person fare? Let's find out. All right, which of these is Zelda?
Zelda is the princess.
That is correct. You know your stuff. Very good. Who of these characters is Zelda?
The green one.
The princess.
You are right, sir. The green one is not right. Who of these characters is Zelda?
This one.
Yeah, that's right. The princess. Of these characters, which one is Zelda?
That one.
Yes, the princess. You got that correct. Good job.
I'm not one of those people that like make stupid errors on this because I've seen these videos before.
Okay, who is this guy?
Uh-oh. I have no idea.
I'm trying to look on your link there, see if it gives me a clue.
Don't look at the link.
I don't know.
I have not got the slightest idea.
I have no idea.
I can't remember. Sorry.
It's Ganondorf, but good job.
Ganondorf, yes.
What is this guy's name?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't remember.
I want to say Ganondorf.
Oh my god, you got it. Good job.
Ganondorf?
Yes.
He must have grown up in a different neighborhood than me.
My next question is, how many pieces are in the Triforce?
Three.
That's a good guess, and that is a winner. How many pieces are there in the Triforce?
Three.
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 Three?
Three.
Oh my god.
Three.
That's good. Yeah, see, try. Kind of gives it away.
I did go to college.
So there you have it, folks. Regular people do know The Legend of Zelda pretty well. And they should. Zelda is awesome. All right, let's switch it back to you, Jose.
Listen.
Thanks a lot, Naomi. And it looks like a lot of folks are going to get an education on Zelda. But coming up next on Nintendo Voice Chat, we have here to talk about Nintendo Switch, independent developers, and third-party relations is Damon Baker from Nintendo.
Hello.
Joining us for a segment as well is Jonathan Dornbush.
Hello.
And Per Schneider.
Hello.
So, Damon, this is a big week for you. You guys kicked off this week with announcements about indie games. You had an indies showcase.
We did.
Really good presentation. Why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on with Nintendo Indies, and specifically your team, because you're portfolio management now. That's sort of your role, a little different than what I've known you to do in the past slightly.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of marketing and communications for our third-party partners in the past. And in the last, I guess, 8 months or so, then I've been heading up a partner management team. It's mostly portfolio management, content curation, and it covers our Japanese publishers, our big AAA publishers in the West, and also our independent developers as well. So it's been keeping me busy. I'm very much looking forward to getting some sleep this weekend. Yeah. It's been a long time coming, but super proud of all of the teams that have been contributing and supporting Nintendo Switch, and it's just going to be awesome to get it into the hands of the fans this week. It's awesome.
We all watched the live stream with your presentation here in the office together, and they were I think everyone was just really impressed with the kind of rapid fire announcement of titles and you know, some timed exclusives, some like Stardew Valley launching with multiplayer and all that kind of stuff. I'm impressed with just the variety of stuff. How did you approach this? Do you sit down and you say, hey, we need a game in column A, a game in column B? Like, you try to cover genres, or is it more about going out there, meeting people, and then hearing from them what they've got that they want to offer up?
It's a really good question. It manifested over a lot of different iterations. I mean, luckily we have a ton of content to choose from, as you saw from that pseudo infographic that we circulated earlier this week. So there's a lot of great content that's in development. And I think what we decided to go for was a few different angles. One is we wanted to focus on titles that were coming in the near future. We knew that fans really wanted to know what they could sink their teeth into. early on in the console life cycle. As soon as this content comes out, like what is going to be available in the Nintendo eShop? Yeah. So we wanted to focus on some of that. We also wanted to focus on some of the great content that we've been fortunate enough to procure for an exclusivity window or outright exclusively. So we've got a ton of that type of content as well, which is a little bit new for Nintendo platforms. We haven't really aggressively gone after that. And I can't say that we have aggressively gone after it this time either. It just happens to have kind of come together. And I think it's based on the excitement that these independent developers have for the system. Once they get their hands on it, one, super easy for them to get their content over to the platform really quickly. And then two, once they could dive into it, then to be able to unlock some of the bells and whistles and doing some of the cool functionality and why it just makes so much sense for their games to be on Nintendo Switch. So everything kind of like culminated into this really tight, you know, segment. And I don't think that we wanted to draw it out. We yep. just wanted to get the content out there. Some of it had already been announced, but maybe some of the features or the exclusivity hadn't been announced. So we wanted to reiterate some of those key points. Some were complete first reveals. So we wanted to make sure that we spent an adequate amount of time on that. So it wasn't like, okay, every title is going to get a minute. It was more like, what can we focus on? And I guess the last part was, we really wanted to showcase some of the indie publisher relationships that we've established. Mm-hmm. So, for us, I mean, it was awesome to be able to highlight, you know, Team 17 and the great portfolio they have and Raw Fury, you know, coming off of winning awards, this week with Goner. That just happened to tie in really, really nicely with, for us. Chucklefish, who are on a tear with amazing content as well. So being able to establish these relationships with indie publishers and then being able to look at it from a portfolio standpoint, that they have all this amazing content that's coming out over the next couple of years. If they're big fans of Nintendo Switch, then it's easier to get all of that content over eventually. On top of the individual relationships that we have with developers as well.
So it does sound, though, like you're being more selective than what was going on with Wii U. I think with Wii U, it sounded like it was a bit more open, that anyone can bring a game to the platform and it would get on. Like, what has that changed? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, it evolved over time. I think with Wii U, we were catching up in terms of middleware support as well. So it was in the Wii U generation that we first established the relationship with Unity. So a few years ago here at GDC, we actually unveiled that and showcased a bunch of content for Wii U that was utilizing the Unity engine at the time. And so that's when we started opening up the ecosystem and the dev environment to anybody and everybody. And I think the mentality there was, because we had been conservative in the past, let's open it up and see, you know, cast this big net, and you never know where the next hit game is going to come from. And where, who are we to say what is a good game and what isn't a good game, honestly? So we can, leverage.
I think Nintendo knows a little bit about that. No,
well, but maybe from the first party side, I mean, they know what they're working on and everything, but okay, let me rephrase it. Who am I to judge what's a good game? I know what kind of games that I like, but that might not be for everybody. So we took that strategy of opening it up. The challenge with that, though, is that by opening it up and lowering that barrier of entry, then, you know, not only do you get really high quality content, but you get a bunch of content that was rushed or people trying to make a buck off of a newer marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so, what we decided to do, at least early on for this system, is we've put so much time and effort in messaging what Nintendo Switch is all about and what's great about it. The fact that it's a console experience on the go and that we've got this multiplayer baked into the box. You can hand Joy-Con off to somebody else and have an instant two-player game. So just leveraging those two elements, making sure that we've got content that evangelizes that. And it doesn't mean that we're saying no to games that, for example, only use the touchscreen. But I think that we want to make sure that our partners understand what fans are expecting and manage those expectations. Because the last thing that we want is for one of our partners to spend so much time and resources in making a game and it's not what people want. Mm-hmm. If they've purchased, you know, spent $300 on a Nintendo Switch, then they want probably want content that's going to leverage that rather than a port or something else. So I think, you know, eventually you'll see more of that content coming through, but it was really important for us, at least for launch window, to really focus our efforts on these unique experiences, these original experiences, identifying future looking content versus backwards looking content. No matter how perfect it might be for the system, and making sure that we honor our fans with these great experiences. So that's kind of the strategy that we've taken for now, and we're going to try and hold to it. I don't know how long I can hold the door. I can hold on it, but I think we're working together with our other regions as well in trying to maintain this line, at least for the time being, and making sure that every time people come into the eShop, they're seeing something really cool and exciting that
I'm interested in. I like that you snuck in a Hodor reference there, because if I was standing up next to him, I'm about half his height. It's chairs that are evening this out.
Yeah, these chairs make us all seem the same.
But when I was watching your presentation and all the reveals and the announcements, I was thinking, you know, it's good that you're here, because back home probably your phone is ringing off the hook, because a lot of indies are now seeing a handheld console with sticks and buttons, you know, something where if they've traditionally developed for Steam, they now have an outlet on a handheld console and they want to be on it, right? Yeah, and then there's the great attraction that it's not a completely open platform like with the App Store, where, you know, dozens and dozens of new games come out every day. Like, going forward, like, how will you pick what games to let in? Because you guys have limited time and... Yeah, maybe even limited shelf space on what you can promote on the console and make successful. Like, do you go for games that offer something new and unique on Switch, where like an indie has to work a little harder to add a unique element to it that wasn't on another platform? Or is it more about kind of notability and filling a gap in the genre lineup, for example? Right. Don't know.
It's a work in progress. Yeah. We do have a committee internally that where we are evaluating pitches and content, and we try and take that perspective not just from people on my team, but from other teams within our publisher and developer relations department, and getting different perspectives, whether they just work on the lot check side of things or certification, whether they work on the business side of things. It's nice to get different perspectives in terms of what people gravitate towards. So we're evaluating that. We're looking for exciting experiences, and again, it doesn't have to be exclusive necessarily, but at least we're looking for simultaneous releases. So if it's a multi-platform title, I think it's fair that we're looking for something that's going to be there alongside other platforms as well. But it's hard to determine exactly what it is we're looking for until we see it. But I guess what's really encouraging is that at least with the initial showing from the video and from this media showcase that we did here at GDC, it seems like everybody is enjoying the content that we've identified as being a priority for us, and that is going to be a good experience for fans of Nintendo Switch. So I think if we can keep doing what we're doing, then we're going to be off to a good start.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems varied enough, but the point is that there is a steady stream and supply of these games without oversaturating the player.
Yeah.
I think what I've loved about the heydays of the best Xbox Live Arcade or the PSN store, when they weren't overbearing you with how many games week after week were coming out, it seems like that's sort of the emphasis here, is to give you a certain number of games without saying, here are 30 games this week.
No, that's exactly right. And I don't blame any developer or publisher approaching us to leverage the fact that we've got a brand new marketplace. Mm-hmm. I mean, these partners put so much time and energy and resources into making a game. They want to leverage every channel that's available. But if we flood that market, then nobody is going to benefit. You won't be able to find the content. Discoverability becomes really, really difficult. And especially as we start, we want to make sure that we set a high bar, not only for the fans that are coming in to the Nintendo eShop to look for content that they know there's this high quality there, but also for other prospective developers to understand, okay, this is the quality that I have to hit in order to be considered As a viable option for Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I felt like with the Wii, you know, the World of Goo kicked off things there weren't a lot of titles. And so I think a lot of people gave this game a shot and then said, oh my God, like the quality of this title is so high.
Yeah.
Like I'd buy this on disc and I'd be happy with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's obviously the kind of ecosystem you want, that there's enough room for these games to breathe and to be discovered.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, I also really like that you had games that were reminiscent of like kind of more classic experiences and filling a gap. Like there's a game that looks like an Advance Wars game, right?
Yeah.
There's a game that looks a little bit more like a Rayman experience, and those are not the, you know, we don't have an Advance Wars game or a Rayman game at launch, but you know, the indies are filling that gap, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate that we have those opportunities. I think we're trying to give the fans what they want. Fortunately, we know Nintendo fans pretty well. We know that a lot of them grew up, you know, playing Nintendo games and are very nostalgic about those experiences. And so I think we're looking to, at least for the first few months, and bringing out experiences that we think that they're really going to enjoy. I don't want to pigeonhole all, you know, pixelated games as automatically being associated with being indie. But for us, it's really about the gameplay experience. And if it's fun to pick up and play, whether it looks like a Blaster Master Zero or a Shovel Knight, or whether it looks like a Snake Pass or a Yooka-Laylee, those are the types of experiences that I think our fans want to get their hands on, and they want to get immersed in it.
And they played a generation of fans of the Yooka-Laylees of the N64, whereas you get the 8-bit for NES. And I think you are able to capture all generations of fans who are buying the Switch.
I hope so. Yeah.
So then one of the areas that some folks are very sort of focused on and concerned about, though, is sort of the larger third parties. And sort of that's their area where they're like, well, I see what's coming to the platform, but I'm concerned still. I feel like it's not some of them may not be original enough. Like, how would you sort of address that person, that someone who is concerned about, well, you know, where's the EA, the Ubisoft stuff? And is there more cooking that we just don't know about?
Yeah, there's a lot more cooking. Otherwise,
like what?
I would be fired. I mean, it's my job to cook things. So I can't announce anything specifically here. So don't kick me out. But
write it down?
No. On your new desk?
Yeah.
It started with a P. No, I'm kidding.
Nobody can see the glare anyway, so I can write whatever I want.
Picture it. No, go ahead, please.
I think understandably, our third-party publishers are being conservative. They're taking a wait-and-see approach. A lot of them want to know how this system turns out. And, you know, we had some amazing support from our third-party publisher friends for Wii U and for Nintendo 3DS. But we also need to provide evidence that we're going to be supporting them in the long term, that we're going to be building a really strong install base, that we're creating an easy environment for them to develop in. So I don't hold it against any of them for taking their time in bringing this content out. But I think you'll be excited to see some of this content. And we do have publisher support from partners that either we haven't worked with in a really long time or that we've never worked with before.
No.
So, you know, we have publicly announced, you know, relationships with EA and 2K, who were our friends from the past, and it's great to be working with them closely again. With Bethesda, we've never worked with them before. So we're really excited about some of these major experiences that are going to be coming out over the course of this year and into 2018 and 2019. There's a lot of cool stuff on the way. And I think if anything from this week is, if this week is anything to go by, I think our publisher friends are taking note, and they see that there's a lot of potential here.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine, you know, I mean, once you get the system out into the public, I mean, certainly for indies, they discover it when the machine is out in stores and, you know, a lot of hobby programmers will get interested. But I think you'll have a similar effect too with some of the third parties.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once they take this on the go, I think some light bulbs will go off.
Oh, yeah.
You can deal with it.
And it's not like we're just starting now. I mean, we've been working with these publishers for some time. But what's been exciting, especially over the last couple of weeks, is to be able to actually take a production unit out to visit publishers and developers and get it in their hands and show them experiences like 1-2-Switch, which, you know, we've talked about HD Rumble and that Joy-Con support, the motion control. It's one thing to see it, but it's a totally different experience to actually play it. And so then to put that in the hands of these super talented developers, they're like, oh, this is how the HD Rumble works. This is, I can actually feel marbles moving around in these controllers.
The ball count is witchcraft, let's be honest. Right? I mean, I was just kind of floored by it.
Yeah.
I
still don't trust it.
I want to open it up. I don't want to take the marbles.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so any of our licensed developers, they can look at the white papers and read the documentation, but it's not until they actually feel, you know, what that ball count game is all about. And they're like, oh, this is how it's supposed to feel. Yeah. This is what we can do with it. So, you know, the opportunity to have been able to do that with the retail and production units over the last couple of weeks has really opened up a lot of eyes. And so I think people will be pleasantly surprised by what's in store. Yeah.
Trying to think of there was one Wii U independent title that forgive me for not remembering the name entirely, but I believe it was about creating rockets that you were then trying to send to the moon.
Kerbal Space Program.
I know that was announced for Wii U. Was a statement ever made for what happened or what's going to happen with Kerbal?
There was never a statement made.
Okay.
But thank you for bringing it up. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
I had to ask because I was very excited to play it, perhaps, and I just want to know if there's an update that you can or can't.
I don't have an update other than we have certainly been in contact with the developers and continue to be in contact with those developers. I think what you may have seen or may have noticed is that late last year, we had a number of titles that we had announced for Wii U. And we had to have some honest conversations with our partners because some of them had been delayed or were scheduled to launch around the holidays for Wii U. And we knew very well that the reality of our prioritization was that as soon as we got into 2017, we needed to shift gears and that we really needed to put our focus towards this new Nintendo Switch platform. So we had some honest dialogue with a lot of these partners, and it's why you're seeing content like Stardew Valley, where we had collaborated with them and have been in contact with Eric and the Chucklefish team for some time. And you know, it was going to be around the November time period on Wii U last year. And you know, we're like, well, maybe it makes more sense. Maybe you're going to have, it's going to be more beneficial for your fans to see this on Nintendo Switch at a later date. So they're tough conversations to have. And we weren't twisting any arms or anything, but I think it was just being honest about the environment at that time. And so some of our partners, you know, decided, let's look at Switch instead. Hollow Knight. That's another great example where it's an absolutely beautiful game and it looked gorgeous on Wii U, but an opportunity to now play it on Nintendo Switch seems like an amazing opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. So we just wanted to arm our partners with what the information they needed in order to make those types of decisions.
I think it's smart. I mean, it's, you know, obviously gamers want to play games as soon as possible, right? And someone's always going to be disappointed over a delay or a switch to a new platform. Oh, God. The console is called Switch.
Sorry.
I knew he was going to do it, too. You just can't get around it. But
Damon's like,
it was going to be that easy, I would have just done that.
I appreciated you used restraint and didn't say Switch Gears. You said Shift Gears.
Yeah. I noticed that, too. I was ready for it, too. Well. It's something that happens in the office a lot. But, like, Conker's Bad Fur Day was one of those examples, like, on the N64. At the very end of the system's life cycle, we get this really good game and not that many people ended up playing it, right? Yeah. And like, if they had delayed that and made that a launch title for the next platform, I think it would have gotten a lot more eyeballs and a lot more hands on that title. Mm. So I'm actually happy to see some of the games moving. Yeah.
And even to see earlier indies that it's been a few years, but seeing something like Towerfall also on there because Celeste is on there, and seeing Matt Thorson's work continue shows both the continued relationship, but also not being afraid to go back to what did work a few years ago.
Especially if it makes a total sense for the system.
I love having Towerfall on the, to be able to have it on the go. That's going to be fantastic.
That's going
to
be so much fun.
Very, very cool. Yeah. All right. Well, that is all the time we have with you. But thank you so much for coming on into the
Mission. It's my pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're definitely welcome on the show anytime to break any announcements, any secrets, or just stop by and say hello.
Give us that list that you can...
exactly. Grab his moleskin quick. No. And thank you so much for watching Nintendo Voice Chat and listening to Nintendo Voice Chat this week. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you leave us feedback. Email us at mvc.ign.com. Excuse me, misfiring. It's been a long week for all of us, but Switch is almost here, and we will have a very special show next week talking all about our experiences with Nintendo Switch. Thank you so much for watching, listening, and finally, where can folks find y'all on Twitter? Pear, where can they find you?
Pear IGN.
Where can they find you, Jonathan?
At JM Dornbush.
And do you publicize your Twitter account? Because Trenton was in this chair and was like,
he only talks about baseball, right? Or science. Basketball.
Yeah. You don't want to follow Trenton. That's the most boring Twitter feed of all time.
Ooh.
Although we're both Oregon Duck fans, so I can't talk too bad about him. But at DW Bakes is where you can find me. And same for any developers or publishers looking at sending us pitches. Contact me through Twitter.
Great.
Yeah.
And there you have it. Thank you for watching and listening, MVC. And we'll be back next week with another great show.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.